Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Started out by talking about last night's episode of Hard Knocks and what it showed and what it told us, not just about the Browns and perhaps about the NFL. And then we talked about that and more with Mike Florio, about the return of Roquan Smith, etc. A lot on the Cubs, too, looking at just the number of important hitters who are not hitting, examining what could be wrong with Jose Quintana, starting to look at spin rate and the way his pitches may not have the life that they have had in the past. We had Mark Grody on to talk about the Bears and the return of Smith. I guess they finally got his shoulder pads fixed and he is now out there on the practice
field.
That
caused a whole bunch of consternation on Twitter real fast.
He's actually doing football things. Cubs have an interesting lineup today. We're going to talk to Kelly Krull about that in a little bit. But
we also unveiled the football lineup for the Bernstein and McKnight show for this coming football season. It is stacked.
Indeed, we did. Lance Briggs, Rich Campbell, Paul Charchin, Dan Orlovsky, Mike Florio, Hub Arkish, Matt Miller, Pete Futek, Patrick Manley. And that's just the start of it.
The lineup is what it is. Don't know if you caught this story from Cleveland. Indians president Chris Antonetti was talking about the absence of outfielder Leonis Martin, erstwhile Cub. Martin has been laid up in the Cleveland Clinic for nearly a week. He's recovering from an infection, a bacterial infection, that nearly got him. Apparently, it attacked his organs. The infection was life-threatening. Entered the bloodstream, damaged the internal organs. They started to shut down.
Was obviously, it staff?
It doesn't say
it had
whether
to
it was
be, right?
Staff. I would imagine
some,
it is.
Some form of MRSA?
It's
MRSA?
Something like that. The Indians picked him up on July 31st, just before the deadline. Became ill last Tuesday, didn't play Wednesday. 10-day disabled list Thursday. This is all last week. And then Friday, some Indians players had Martin's name on their hats. So that prompted people to ask some questions. And Terry Francona then asked fans to pray for him. Apparently, Martin is going to be stable and has a chance pretty much at a full recovery. But it's going to be a while for the major leaguer, Leonis Martin.
A Phoenix woman and her family found a rattlesnake slithering around her backyard.
I always do snake stories because
Connor's got a snake problem.
God.
She took matters into her own hands to protect her two dogs. She hit it on the head with a shovel. And then she skinned it and
what?
She ate it.
Oh, come on.
Hot damn right there. She said it's like eating a chicken finger with a lot less meat than a chicken finger. But there are pictures. This was a diamondback rattlesnake, which are incredibly common in Arizona. And also, and I speak from experience, incredibly delicious.
You've had them.
I have had rattlesnake. I don't know that it was a Western diamondback.
Don't you have to take the
was
venom?
Was it a Ruby
glands?
El Dorazo?
No, the venom's in
Macata.
The head. It's not in the meat.
That doesn't seep through.
That's
depending on how you kill it.
The difference between poisonous and venomous. The meat's not poisonous. It's wonderful low fat white meat.
I thought you had that whole problem with a blowfish though. You had to. That's got to be
well. That's different.
Differently.
This is just if you get rid of the head and because the venom sacs are there in the jaw pouches. So it really isn't a worry as far as I know. But cut off.
No,
the
but
head
apparently you do have to worry about cutting the head off a snake and it's still biting you.
And yes, we've seen that.
Dealt with that story.
I'm the guy that stung myself with a dead wasp. Right? So I've done that before. But no, she skinned it and now I don't know if she can tan the hide to make shoes out of it or whatever she has to do to make snake leather. But there's a picture of the frying pan and of the rattlesnake fillets being sautéed in oil. Well done, Phoenix woman. That's how you do it.
Well done, snake too. Or is that more of a medium rare kind of meat?
No, just cooked through.
Yeah, okay.
It's a white meat that indeed tastes like chicken.
We perused the chances of a Ken Mastroli Award winner with Mark Grody just a couple of minutes ago, and I figure if that Ken Mastroli Award winner comes from the defensive side of the ball, he's going to be playing quite a bit against Paxton Lynch of the Denver Broncos. I don't know if you saw this, but Paxton Lynch, who was taken 26th overall in the 2016 draft, has been demoted to third string for the Denver Broncos. He's behind Chad Kelly of Ole Miss, the nephew of Jim Kelly, and kind of a guy, a little bro-y, kind of baggy, I guess.
No, he had plenty of issues that dropped him in the draft.
Yeah, and Case Keenum is their starter. Good luck with that. And I just
go get it. You,
I wonder, aren't the Broncos supposed to be able to evaluate quarterbacks? Isn't that the whole thing that Horseface has going for him?
Wasn't that he didn't like Tim Tebow? Because
I thought that was the whole reason they brought him. I mean, I understand that he's, you know, but
no.
Keenum and Kelly and Paxton Lynch, and you're just going to do that?
And despite the fact that Keenum is there, multiple reports say Kelly, to every scout's eye, has been by far the best actual passer that they've seen.
What I've read as well, and I really liked watching him at Ole Miss. I really liked the tape that he put together, and what was ever his last year was. I think he came out after a junior, but you spent your first-round pick on Paxton Lynch, convinced that he was going to be a dude, and you've kind of Trevor Siemian?
I'm going to break form a little bit here. I do have this other story, but the Cubs have a new player. You were mentioning Leonis Martin before.
Yes.
He's part of a tradition of late-season athletes the Cubs like to pick up.
Quentin Berry.
A Quentin Berry-type figure. Well, they think they've picked up the closest thing that baseball has had to a pure pinch runner since Herb Washington. I don't know if you remember that name.
I don't.
You can look up the numbers of Herb
Washington. Look him up.
Former sprinter who was an Oakland Athletic who was simply used to try to steal bases. But you remember Terrence Gore?
Very well.
Terrence Gore has been acquired by the Cubs from the Royals, and it's cash and a player to be named later. Gore is 27. He's been in 49 games in his big league career. Guess how many major league hits he has?
Not many.
None.
Can't hit.
He has no hits.
Neither did Herb Washington, by the way.
Really?
He was 0-4-33. No, 0-4-0.
Never. Did he never have a plate appearance? Or never have
0-for-0? He never had a plate. He scored 33 runs without a plate appearance.
How many stolen bases did he have?
I'm befuddled. 31 in total.
There you go.
17 caught stealing.
Well, so far in 49 major league games, Terrence Gore has 21 steals. He's only been caught 4 times. He scored 14 runs. He does not have a hit. He should not travel with bats. He might not own or possess any bats. He's bad.
He's incredibly fast, though.
He's incredibly
fast. Speed is a weapon. My favorite, though, is Quentin Berry, having never gotten picked off his entire career, and his first stolen base attempt as a Cub, he gets waxed at second base. Ken Rosenthal has done his writing, his musings sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And the headline is, what's behind Bryce's resurgence? Manager decisions looming. The catch and throw kid, more notes. It's his notebook is what it is today from Ken Rosenthal. So he writes a little bit about Bryce Harper. Remember, we've talked a little bit about his surge since the All-Star break. He's got a 1,000 OPS, does Harper, not Rosenthal. He's got 30 home runs so far this season. And he's talking a little bit with Kevin Long, the Nationals hitting coach, about Bryce's work. And in the end, how Long says, in the end, all the stuff that happened to him is going to make him better. He learned more about himself. He learned his value. We watched Ken Rosenthal walk by our show on Friday when we were out at Gallagher Way, and Rosenthal was on his way in to go talk with Kevin Long for this piece. Long goes on to say his value, Bryce, is not in trying to hit home runs. It's in trying to put together good at-bats and hitting line drives, and some of those line drives end up home runs. It's the hitting coach quote, right? Well, Rosenthal didn't stop there. Because an intrepid like Ken Rosenthal would never stop there. He talked with Scott Boras, Bryce's agent.
These are some grandiose comments, shall we say.
And Rosenthal forwarded the Long quotes to Boras, just asking for an opinion. What do you think of this? Scott, let us know what you think. Here's the quote he got back.
This needs to, when you read this, I feel that it should be read by Alec Guinness
or Churchill
or Richard Harris or Albert Finney.
I can't do any of these. Okay. But it's just
James Mason.
Like it.
Few possess the engine of greatness, Boris said. It's a very personal skill level. Great expectations and difficulty arise from its rare power. Only time and the pain of self-understanding create the necessary path to optimum. Once the course is built, greatness becomes defined, and the engine roars for years to come. Settle down, Scott.
Quit yelling.
Jesus.
That's awesome.
What the hell?
Yeah, we got a problem in Germany, and that is a shortage of beer bottles.
What?
They're running out of beer bottles.
It's not the violation of the Rheinheitsgebot?
The Rheinheitsgebot, the ancient brewing law.
1516, man. That's when you set it down.
Spalten Hallertau hops, right? No, it's not violations of the Rheinheitsgebot that are punishable by death.
They've been breaking that law
dismemberment.
Since 1517.
Breaking the law. That was actually, that particular Judas Priest song was about the Rheinheitsgebot. A lot of people don't know that.
By a priest.
Yeah, bad time for them too in Pennsylvania. So apparently it's because it's been hot in Germany, so beer consumption is up, and that's great. So they have plenty of beer, and they're selling plenty of beer, but Germany is, they're very conscious of recycling, and they do the old-fashioned deposit and return.
You get the 5 cents back, like in Michigan?
I think it's the equivalent of 7 cents. People just aren't returning the empties enough, and they can't keep up. They're estimating there are 4 billion beer bottles somewhere in Germany. At any point, each bottle refilled up to 30 times. This is from Inside Magazine that caters to their drink industry. As Germans are drinking more, the empty bottles are piling up by the back door at home, and the beer makers don't know what to do, so there's been this shortage. They can't get a hold of used ones fast enough. Ordering new ones takes too much time. Everybody's caught short. And what has happened is there's actually a California company that does business in Berlin, and they're doing something that previously had been verboten, and that's canning.
Canning German beer.
Yeah,
good,
it is
fine German beer. All of it.
You're not supposed to do it. It is frowned upon, and they're digging in, though. The California company says, we think it's best for the beer. There's no light ingress. Over time, there are some oxygen permeations through the lid of a bottle, which the can doesn't have. They also believe there's a misconception in Germany that they are environmentally unfriendly, saying it's wrong. Cans carry a deposit. 98% get recycled, but those cans make up only 7% of the German beer market. So they got to find a way out of it. If you want to get the beer from the brewery to the thirsty Germans, there are going to have to be some compromises.
There's a lot of brewers who would tell you that they'd go to cans before they go to beer. There's a lot of small operations that get started will go to cans for cost, but it also helps the quality of the overall. Sun King, I think, in Indianapolis is one of those breweries that I believe still just does cans. Carbon 4 out of Madison, a couple of high school friends of mine run that thing, and they've stuck to cans because the beer tastes better in their estimation. It just holds together better. That is the Midday Midway. We do it every day here on the Bernstein and McKnight Show. Coming up, we got some comments from after last night's Cubs game. Ugly as the result was, Ben Zobrist had himself a colorful conversation with a home plate umpire and detailed it afterward.
He was really, really good. And we decided it's worth playing in full, and not just in little chunks.
It's quality
stuff. You get the context, let it breathe a little bit. And it's Ben Zobrist. It's every bit of an established veteran hitter just being honest with you about what's going on up there at the plate as he's trying to do his job and the umpire ostensibly is trying to do his. So we'll go inside that a little bit with Ben Zobrist. You'll hear from him next on The Score.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
It was.
Yeah, it was. Narrator, it was. Joe Maddon talking about his buddy Ben Zobrist and what happened yesterday. And it's a great umpiring crew, too. That's the thing. Phil Cuzzi, Tom Hallion.
It's another thing if it's C.B. Buckner.
And Angel Hernandez.
Angel Hernandez, right. Or if it's Joe West or somebody else like that behind the plate.
It's a respected crew.
It's fair. That's a good point. I thought.
And it also happened to be a pitcher who had his good stuff. And he was putting that slider just over and over again in really awkward places, front door, back door stuff with that pitch.
And the pitch in question wasn't horrible. I mean, it was within a ball of the strike zone, I thought. Granted, outside, but a ball, we've seen that called strikes before.
But
however,
over time, over the course of the game, things started to build
and down a little.
Finally, Ben Zobrist had enough, and he squared off with Phil Cuzzy. He ends up getting kicked out, and then after the game, took a deep breath and had an involved conversation with what happened.
Ben, it's not often that we see you get worked up, let alone ejected. Was your problem with the consistency of the zone, or just the calls themselves?
Just the calls themselves. I mean, I thought they were obvious balls. And then when I was obviously animated because I knew it was a ball, and was called out on it, I was told basically, like, be quiet, you know. So, and I was like, and then I was threatened that I was going to get kicked out of the game, and I walked away. So I just felt like before my last at-bat, I just wanted to let him know calmly what I thought. And kind of see if he would take the criticism well or not, you know. And so we had a discussion, and it didn't go that great. And, you know, he kicked me out of the game. I was already coming out of the game anyways, so. But, yeah, that at that point.
You talked to him for a while there, and then it took a while to actually get kicked out. Was there a magic word, or did he just have enough?
I think he had enough. You know, I just wanted to be able to say my piece, but, you know, at the last, you know, point, he didn't want to hear anymore. So he's got the gavel, you know, and he decided he was going to do what he wanted to do. So.
Have you been ejected before?
No, that's the first time.
Does it take a lot? I mean, was this one of the most riled up you've been?
Yeah, no, not to be honest, it wasn't. I've been more riled up before. I've been more animated and emotional and upset than I was. But, you know, I just felt like, you know, I wanted to have a conversation about it, and he didn't.
Was this building? You talk building to it?
I mean, the build was the pitches that were called. That's all. I mean, it was just like, you know, I'm looking at, you know, my at bat. You know, when you have good quality at bats as a hitter, and you feel like it's kind of taken away from you, you know, you want some sort of answer, you know, or you want some sort of, at least, you know, you want to be assured that they're going to go back and make an adjustment, and that's what I asked for, you know. And, you know, it was met with, you know, he didn't really, he basically, you know, he didn't want to talk about that. You know, he didn't want me to tell him that. And, you know, I just basically said, well, that's why, you know, we want an electronic strike zone. You know, and that's what obviously got me talking. So, you know, it is what it is. I mean, I'm not going to lie. I think that's, you know, when you're dealing with that and you're, you know, trying to have good quality at bats and you, you know, feel like, you know, it gets taken away from you, then, you know, sometimes, you know, your pride gets in the way and you say things that are going to upset them, you know, and, you know, obviously that upset him and he tossed me.
There used to be another magic word. Apparently that's the new one now, huh?
I guess. I mean, so I think he was probably going to toss me anyways before I said that, to be honest, just because I wouldn't go away. So, you know, I mean, at some level, because we're not really allowed to have the conversation with them, that's the only way that we can really say our piece.
Does it matter that Joe went out there to also reinforce what happened?
I'm sure, yeah. He knows that I'm not going to argue if it's close. I rarely do that. I mean, I know the zone pretty well, I feel like. And if it's close, I'm going to walk back. You know, I might disagree a little bit, but I'm going to go look at it before I say anything. But this one I knew. I knew it wasn't ever on the plate. And, you know, I didn't need to go look on the video. And so that's why I got animated at first. And, you know, he didn't want me to even be animated about it. And I was told that later, and I said, I mean, when I'm sure, I'm going to be animated about it. It's just, that's what happens.
Since you brought it up, is that something you might worry about, the carryover? You say something like that to Ump? Do you need to, you know, so...
Well, you know what? You know what? The integrity of us doing our jobs and them doing their jobs should keep that from happening. I mean, but they're human beings, you know? I mean, and that's the point is, you know, they get upset, we get upset. They don't want to hear us say certain things, and we don't want to feel like they don't care, you know? And I think that he cares, you know? I think that all the umpires care, but sometimes it's frustrating when you feel like, you know, I felt like I knew the zone right there, and I felt like the bat was taken away from me.
Do you really think there's a need for an electronic strike zone that's talked about often, but some players say, no, we like the...
You know, I'm just going to leave it at that. I think that that discussion will happen eventually, but I'm just going to leave right now at the fact that I said that today. That's it.
I think that's a yes. That's what that sounds like.
Sounds like it.
It sounds like it's obviously. Just let's take all of this silliness out of it.
I mentioned before with when we were talking with Joe, I think it was last week, that I'm just kind of sitting around in the White Sox dugout 2 years ago, and Justin Morneau, I'm sitting down doing an interview with him. We're just kind of talking, going back and forth.
Well, he's a proselytizer.
About stuff. Yeah. I mean, apropos of nothing, we weren't even talking about the strike zone or like, hey, Justin, what do you think about the game or something?
I need a dictionary when you talk.
He just brought up the strike zone, electronic strike zone, and how much he wants one, how much he's talking to guys in clubhouses he's been in and all over the place, whether it was with the Pirates or the Rockies or there with the White Sox. He's been pushing an electronic strike zone, and obviously he's out of the game now, but I didn't realize that there's, and maybe Ben's part of it, maybe he's not, I don't know, and he kind of declined to say here, but it seems to me there's a bit of a surge of players themselves talking about a need for an electronic strike zone. And some of that's probably born out of frustration against umpires, right, or with umpires. Some of it's probably born out of the idea that that you could get a more consistent strike zone. And I think that's definitely what Morneau was telling me about 2 years ago, is that it doesn't matter whether you miss a breaking ball here or there, or whether the electronics can't find that ball that drops in from the top, that high curveball or whatever it is, it doesn't matter.
It just sort of touches the back of the three-dimensional zone.
Doesn't matter. It would be consistent.
Correct.
Once you learn, this is Morneau's opinion on the whole thing, once you learn what is and what isn't, it's not going
to
change.
That gets back to what Madden said, where I've been told that the ump said the stuff that I see from the side isn't going to look like it. Yeah, of course.
Right.
There's going to be an adjustment period to, oh, that's now a strike. Got it.
The strike zone has changed before. You know, you hear all the stories about the early 90s strike zone and Greg Maddux and Tom Glavin getting the extra 4 or 5 inches off an edge, or when they move from shins to knees and knees back to shins, and now the high strike isn't called and all this. I mean, we've changed the strike zone before. We've seen it change, whether it be on purpose by an actual change in the rules or an emphasis that the league would have umpires put on this strike or that strike. We've seen it change before. The way it's called is certainly a bigger change than the shape and size of it. But I think a lot of players, a lot more players than we might think, are pushing for an electronic strike zone.
However, it's not the reason the Cubs offense has been sucking over the last little while.
No,
it's not.
But neither is Ben Zobrist.
Correct.
Over his last 20, it's a .400 batting average, and he's slugging .660.
This segment brought to you by Jewel. Shop Jewel's 4-day sale for fresh, whole, bone-in pork loin. Just 99 cents a pound. Limit 2. A 3-pound bag of imported clementines is only $2.99. And get 15 to 16.3-ounce Skippy peanut butter for just 99 cents each.
Is that the regular or the crunchy?
Limit 2.
I got to have the crunchy.
Really?
Yeah, I want the super crunch.
Really? Doesn't
if
get
I
in
could
your...
have No, oh, I want see? It all. I want all the crunch you could possibly find. In fact, if there were a peanut butter that were mostly crunch and just a little bit of, you know, butter spread around, that'd be great.
Also, Bernstein McKnight brought to you by Northwestern Football. Coach Fitz and the Wildcats host Michigan, Nebraska, Wisconsin, Notre Dame, Illinois, and more this fall at Ryan Field. Season and single game tickets are on sale now at NUSports.com. That's why my phone was buzzing. My Shane tracker went off. I was getting alerts. And
I still got to try and peg him with the Shane tracker. Maybe it's
right.
Just commercial
it's the,
break.
It's the Find My Shane
app. Find My Shane app. It's working. It's up and running. I just haven't pegged them with the Shane tracker.
Yeah, also
yet.
Also set out the surrealist tweet of the day. I'm still trying to make. We were getting ready for the show.
The Find My Shane app?
No, not the Find My Shane app. We're getting ready because we're getting very
close to cross-referencing Shane's tweets with the Find My Shane app.
That's part of it. It helps determine from where he's tweeting so you know how to avoid him.
Maybe he digs the Shane tracker out of his arm or something. Maybe it's his arm. Maybe
no,
it's not.
it's like the Matrix. It's like this whole thing. There's a, like a bug inside, and you got to put the thing in and find it and pull it out and throw it to the side of the road. No, but what happened was he got a flat tire. I still don't understand what this tweet means. He tweets something to the effect of, I got a flat tire, and I should have brought this. And there's a picture of grilled asparagus. I mean, not for the life of me.
I
imagine what that could only in somewhere in the mind of Shane Reardon. Would grilled asparagus have anything to do with either fixing a flat tire, suffering through a flat tire? It's pure surrealism.
I have no help for you here.
Okay. I try because I know you speak Shane.
I do. I try and speak Shane. I listen when he speaks anyway. But now he's not going to come in here because he knows I got the Shane tracker waiting for him.
Cubs talk with Kelly Krull of NBC Sportsnet Chicago next on The Score.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
That's Joe Madden cleaning up a little business here before we bring in Kelly Krull. The texters are saying, Bernstein, you're a word puzzler. You should have understood that Shane Reardon's tweet was wordplay for a spare, I guess. That's why the picture of asparagus.
You blew it!
Okay, all right. I get it. It's not particularly funny, but and it's not really a pun, but... Okay. I get it. And now it's time for your chance to win $1,000 in cash on The Score. This hour's keyword is scratch. So win some scratch by texting scratch to 72881 by the end of the hour. Again, the keyword is scratch to 72881. One randomly selected nationwide entrant from this hour will win. Please do not text and drive. Message and data rates may apply. Kelly Krull of NBC Sports Chicago, the Cubs reporter who is on Twitter at Kelly_Krull, joins the Bernstein and McKnight show now. Hi, Kelly.
Hello, gentlemen. How are you this Tuesday afternoon?
Good.
It is Tuesday, right?
No, it's Wednesday.
Wednesday.
Woo! It's
hey,
Wednesday.
Happy
I hope.
Wednesday.
You are covering a baseball season,
well.
Aren't you?
Yeah, that's how you know you're in the midst of a baseball season.
Oh, you guys, I'm so sorry. Yeah, no, that's what it feels like. You really do lose what day of the week or, you know, what the month is, all that good stuff. So, yeah, let's get this rolling on a good note, huh?
Do you divine any meaning from some of these lineup changes? Not that we're talking about the lineup changes themselves or the lineup having a meaning, but sometimes it's a window into what Joe Madden's trying to accomplish with the heads of some of his hitters.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. I don't know that you read into a whole lot of having Anthony Rizzo back in the cleanup spot, right? I mean, that's the guy that you kind of, between he and Bryant, sort of expect to see there. So I don't know that you read into much more of this other than Joe doing what he tries to do by putting a guy like Javi Baez, who was 0 for 18 yesterday and finally got that double there in the sixth, and hey, let's try and get him going a bit. To be completely honest with you, knowing the way Joe does things, the lineup, and likes to switch things up, I was a bit surprised we didn't see Rizzo moved out of that leadoff spot before now. But I think there might have been a sense that, hey, don't want people to think I'm panicking, and so now I'm just going to change things around. So I think today we're just seeing him kind of get guys in situations where he just try to get them going, try to get something going. David Bodie's back out there today. Maybe he'll, you know, he certainly after Sunday night is riding a cloud nine right now. So I think that's really all you can look into and just see if we can watch these guys come out and perform like the offense that we know they're capable of performing, which we have not seen since what, early July probably, that we were talking about, oh, first to third and oh, using the whole field. And I mean, where has that gone? So I think that's all this is Joe hoping to change things around and let guys see a different perspective.
So Kelly, we had Joe on yesterday and we asked him about Chris Bryant, and Joe kind of mentioned, hey, listen, it may be the case that we don't get Chris back at 100% this year.
Right.
Obviously, some of Chris Bryant is better than no Chris Bryant in almost every circumstance. I'm just wondering if in talking with guys in that clubhouse that they're aware that that's going to be the case if and when or when and if Chris gets back.
That's a great question. I don't know that those guys necessarily, you know, you two are both around these guys from time to time as well, and you see how they go about each and every day worrying about themselves and the guys that are going to be on the field with them.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not to say that they are not completely aware of Chris and his timeline and what he's trying to do, and they see him working and see him trying to come back. But I don't know that they worry so much about, hey, when is he going to be back? And when he's back, can he perform like the Chris Bryant we know he is? And I think if you can get KB back in that lineup regardless, it's still Chris Bryant. It's still a bat that other pitchers will see and maybe make them think twice about a pitch to this guy and knowing they're going to be facing him. Or however, I think he is still, no matter what, whether the power is there or not, or he has to, whatever we're looking at with him, I think he's still a threat in that lineup just because of his name. And I think it gives this guy, this clubhouse, the Cubs, a boost to have him back out there. So I just am curious, if that's the case, are you going to see him in a different spot in the lineup? You know, are you going to put him at 5 or 6 just trying to get on base, right? That's what I will be curious to see what Joe does once that time frame comes. But I will say there's no point, like you heard Joe tell you guys, there's no point in pressing him and trying to get him back quickly, because if they get this wrong at this point, he's done for the year.
We had Jim Hickey on earlier on the station on the Mully and Haw show, as he's on weekly, and he painted a relatively optimistic picture for Yu Darvish, at least no setbacks yet, and we're on track for that rehab start. How important, looking at all the problems that this rotation has, it just, and they've been awful. The rotation this year has just been downright terrible. Is Darvish a need or is he a luxury?
Oh, well, can you define by need where you expect this team to be? Like,
well, to win the World Series, yeah. I mean, if we're holding it to their standard, right?
Then absolutely he's a need. He's a desperate need at this point because of exactly what you just said. They have not gotten the innings. They haven't seen the performances from this pitching staff. I mean, this is the staff that Joe Maddon was telling us about in March out in Scottsdale, Arizona, that was – maybe going to be the best one he'd ever worked with. And we have not seen that come to fruition whatsoever. And the start we saw from Cole Hamels the other night, I remember thinking to myself, wow, we just watched two pitchers go all the way through the seventh and then turn it over to the bullpen. Like, when's the last time we saw a game like that? It was really fun to watch two great pitchers going toe-to-toe like that. But no, Yu Darvish, if they can get him back healthy, and he can be the Yu Darvish that Cole Hamels is standing in there telling us is an ultimate competitor. And Jesse Chavez is telling us, oh, I remember in Texas him doing this and this, right? Then the Cubs, and that would be the biggest acquisition they could possibly get at this point in the year. So I think he's a huge need. Is he a luxury? Well, I mean, he was supposed to be healthy and supposed to be leading this team down the stretch anyway. So I think, yeah, with what they're seeing and wanting to, you know, they have to get their bullpen in order, and they can't do that unless they have their starting rotation giving day after day after day these consistent performances.
Saw a report, Kelly, from Gordon Whitmire, I believe it was, that Brandon Morrow is going to throw off a mound this weekend. I think that actually just came out a couple of minutes ago. How much conversation has there been around Morrow taking the ball this weekend? And is this a Would that be an outing where you could then determine, the Cubs could then determine a timeline for him, or is this more of a check on what he's got and we'll see later sort of thing?
Yeah, I think it's the latter a little bit more so, because he really has not done much up to this point. And that was one of the last things that was asked, was just kind of, you know, an update on all the guys. Smiley, Morrow, where are they? And Morrow was, hey, he might pick up a ball this weekend and actually throw on flat ground, and then we'll see. But they are being very, very cautious with all of these guys because of where we are at the season. At this point, why are you rushing them back? If it doesn't work out, then you have no chance. So it's almost like, let's wait and see. And to this point, I mean, we watched how this last few weeks has unfolded without Brandon Morrow, and you've got Pedro Strop doing an okay job. No, it's not where you want him if you're the Cubs, but he's done all right. And then other than that, you haven't been in too many save situations, which is another problem per se. But yeah, I think with Brandon Morrow, they'll wait and see. They'll see how he feels the following day, and it's going to be a slow process. I don't foresee him being back real soon. I mean, this is a guy who's dealt with injuries throughout his career, right? So they'll take it nice and slow with Brandon Morrow.
Is it possible David Bodie goes down again before he comes up? Everybody's talking about a playoff roster and a lock for the playoff roster. Hey, as I'm actually looking at the hard numbers, I'm not going to be surprised if he's returned to Des Moines.
Yeah, wouldn't that be something? I mean, this is a guy that I don't want to say being certainly not been carrying them, but he's had some big moments, right, that you kind of felt like the momentum he provided would be carried over in a way. And you're right. There's certainly, because he's got those options and looking at the guys who could come back healthy, there's a chance he goes back there. But you want to see Chris Bryant back in the lineup, and you really want to see the rest of these guys start to get it going. I was looking at the bottom of the lineup today, guys, and, you know, between Schwarber yep. and Addison Russell, I mean, these are guys that the bottom of your lineup is it has to come together.
Look at them. Contreras. We were looking yes. at the slash line for Contreras since the break. Yeah. It's awful.
I know. Yeah. And with him, you're sitting there thinking, well, where's the guy that we saw, what was it, like 2016, where he went on that stretch of just he was on another planet. I don't know that that's the guy that we're going to see for years and years to come, but there's the one we're seeing right now. There's more. There's certainly more to him. I think, truthfully, I mean, I think he's been very consumed with the starting rotation and trying to get the best out of these guys, and that has been, as we have been talking about, a full-time job for him. So not to say that you put the work offensively on the back burner, but his main objective is to be getting the best out of the starting staff, and that's been hard enough.
Rough second half for Addison Russell, too. He got the day off with the off day, and then won it bad after Zobrist got tossed yesterday, too. But that was essentially a day off for him. Who's talking to him? Who's got his ear as far as making sure that he stays level and still provides defensively for this team the way he does? I have to imagine the Cubs are hoping for a bit of a rebound from him offensively, but overall, the profile for Addison Russell isn't that much of a hitting shortstop.
No, you're absolutely right. And I was just looking, as you were talking, at what he's done against Junior Guerra, who's going this afternoon, and he hasn't had a whole lot of success against him. But then again, no one's seen this guy a whole lot. I mean, he's only had 8 at-bats against him, so that's not really a fair sample size to be looking into. But who's in his ear is a good question. I see him going down to the cage every day. So, I mean, he's spending a lot of time with Chili Davis. And, you know, Joe was asked about him as well as Schwarber this morning. And he said when he was, exiting the game early yesterday, he was able to get down and watch a little bit more video. And he felt like from a mechanical standpoint, he saw something with both Schwarber and Russell that he was going to pass along today, and that it could be something as simple as that. But he goes, this is going to be a patient process. And that left me thinking, I don't know then when we're going to see what we have seen before from Addison Russell. But you're right, he doesn't look comfortable at the plate at all right now.
And they're still arguably the best team in the National League.
Yeah, we're going through all of these negatives,
yeah.
Right?
Yep.
All these negatives, and there they are, still the best team. That's what I find myself having a hard time sometimes coming down on. It's just because I think Cubs fans alike and us as guys who watch this day in and day out, we've just seen so much more that it's strange to watch them go through a lull like this for so long. Especially, we were talking just a few weeks ago, I remember you guys brought up the record that Joe Maddon has in August. You expect them to go on this stretch of runs, or this run where they put it all together. And right now, from an offensive standpoint, with as much talent as in that clubhouse, you're just confused. You're just wondering what's going on and when it's going to break through. And they could have that day today, right? They'll put up 15 runs today after none yesterday, and then that's why we'll have this run differential that we're always bringing up and talking about. But I will say this, Kyle Hendricks, I think I feel like he has been trending in the right direction. We're watching a guy who for 3 straight outings hasn't walked a guy. He gave up those 2 runs on 8 hits last time out against Washington, remember, but it was in the first inning. That's been his Achilles heel all season long, is that first inning. And then he really settled in, but he got no run support. So, you know, maybe that evens out today against the Brewers and what is a huge series for them. They're treating this like it's already, you know, September in the last couple weeks. And I think the Cubs need to match that intensity this afternoon.
Kelly, thanks as always.
You betcha, guys. Thanks for having me on. And enjoy the rest of your Wednesday afternoon.
Yes, she got it right.
Or whatever day it is.
Kelly Krull from NBC Sports Chicago. Next up, Len Casper. More Cubs talk on The Score.
Oh, such a clutch pickup, Dave. I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
What, you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, a Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
He shoots. He scores.
Go to Blinds.com for up to 45% off and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Go right now for up to 45% off at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.